evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and we're shifting out of the third dimension tonight with our wonderful, wonderful guest, Elias Lonsdale and Theana. I don't know if I should say and Theana, but Elias's latest book is The Christ Letters, An Evolutionary Guide Home, and it's really about his channeling a lot of information about the journey of his wife, Theana, who is on the other side and exploring Christ consciousness, or consciousness for us all, really. So welcome to the show, Elias.
Thank you.
What a wonderful thing to be able to wander through the different dimensions and go beyond the veil. Isn't it wonderful?
Yeah, it's the way of life for me, and it has been for a very long time.
Well, it's interesting to me that you're an astrologer, and you're an astrologer of pretty great renown, I would say. And I'm wondering about, as we read about how Theana, and I gather you as well, met the Christ, and how she's working so much with the Christ. And as I read through this book, which is, it's very gripping, and it's really not an easy read in many ways, meaning everything I read takes a little time to digest because it touches so many different levels of who we are, different levels of self, and how complex we are, light to dark and dark to light. And I found also, this is a long preamble, I apologize for that, but I found myself asking, I wonder how Elias makes peace with all of this and with the mappings of astrology. Is it beyond astrology? What would you say?
Astrology created a beautifully well put together black box.
Okay.
And that black box became so well technologized and so well agreed to by all the astrologers that essentially a very solid thought form developed about what astrology is and how it works. Star Genesis, what I do that's in sync with my greater cosmic stream and what you're, you know, really asking about, it comes from a greater source. It's not my own mentality. It's not what I put together in my black box mind. It's something that comes through me.
Mm-hmm. So you're channeling it, sort of.
Yeah, but in a different, new way. And it's never from me. It's never like I have an opinion about somebody in a reading or I think this or that. It doesn't interest me. What interests me is that there's a truth that needs to be spoken, and I need to be a vessel for it, and it's not about me at all.
Hmm. Well, when you say it's not about me, I chuckle because quite often, you know, we're talking about creating our reality so much, and people say it's not about you, you know, and I go, well, actually, it really is. We go down to creation. So you're pole vaulting past that little concept, right?
Well, yeah, the solar principle that you're expressing is correct. It's foundational. It's that if you don't be utterly who you are, everything else will fall short. That's definitely the solar reality that we are based in here.
Yes, yeah, so as I am reading, and I'll let you talk more about this amazing book, but there are huge sections where, let me see, I'll start with the one that is kind of a predicated, which she says that Christ's most agonizing Groundhog Day crucifixion kind of thing is realizing, or is in the awareness, that what he tried to give us was that we could do all that he was teaching. We could also do it, but instead we deified him and separated us and created tremendous separations from it. Did I understand that right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe you want to talk a little bit about that, because from there I want to talk a bit about the self. And I think that's a wonderful, wonderful exploration into what the self is, how it comprised, and how do we get out of it. Well, why don't you start? You know a lot more than I do, but I love the way it's put. Thank you.
There is a Christ self in me. That Christ self is closer to who I really am than any self that I'm empirically familiar with as my own. And so much of what we're doing is we're expanding into a vaster self framework, which from one point of view isn't a self at all, from another point of view is a quintessential ultimate self. But either way you want to take it, it's not a personal entity, it's not a separative entity. And the Christ is modeling for us, is showing us that we can go into that new kind of entity, we can become them, that just as he did it, showing it through Jesus' vehicle, he can do it through each of us as his vehicle. Jesus was just one initial vehicle, beautiful, great vehicle, and now each of us is meant to also be a vehicle for the same thing.
And when we go back into the self, so what you're saying is we all have the Christing kind of seed light in us. Is that right?
Yes.
And I love the way Theana, through you, expressed how she encountered over and over as she made her transition, as she moved on through, all the selfness that she had created through protection, need to organize things, setting of priorities. Right? That whole section, I thought that was an intricate weaving of how the self gets concocted. Do you?
Yeah. Sarah had a very interesting relation to her selfhood in her Sarah lifetime because she was a follower of the Baha'i faith and of many Steiner principles, and putting them together, her whole way of seeing herself was as a divine co-creative vessel, but not particularly as it. She wasn't that strong of a self in a way, but she was a tremendously good spiritual sister and child and mother. So what I learned being with her, and she learned being with me, because we were similar in a lot of ways, was how to empower that way of being a self. How to empower being, living beyond yourself, yet truly being centered in your heart. And everything since the triple death has been, for me, so much about that. The Christ Letters is so much about that. The teleclasses are going to be so much about that. We're making room. It's very difficult for any of us to do this. Very, very hard. Mm-hmm. But we're actually making room for an infinite way of being to be how we are. That's what the change is.
So, that makes sense to me, but I'm going to go back to this self and how she refers to how, am I wrong when I say I felt like as I read that we kind of concoct all this cocooning around the essence, the Christing essence of the being, the infinite self?
Well, we are aware, she and I are aware that the soul is different from spirit and different from form, and that each one's soul lives this particular lifetime as, in a sense, their only lifetime. And so from that soul's point of view, which is very authentic and real in its own way, what's happening is that, you know, we're here in this world now, and we have to take up the tools of the earth, which is our own soul life. And so we do have to get very absorbed in ourselves. We do have to get very, very deeply in it. And we do have to acknowledge that part of us that is more bound up with this world and that needs to work it through in this world. It's a vital part of it, and it's not the ultimate truth and reality.
And by the same token, she says, and the Christ says, or that she found, and you probably do too, that there is a really deep love for the intricacies and complexities of this third dimensional life, and wanting to leave it is to ignore that. Do you want to talk a bit about that? I really like that.
Well, I think what's so distinctive about the truth stream, the life stream, the love stream that I'm part of is that we totally affirm, love, appreciate this mortal self in all of their drama. In fact, I did a series of teleclasses up through, you know, December of last year, and then I kind of dropped away from the map of the world for about 4 months. And when I was doing that, we changed islands and we changed our way of life in many ways. But during that time, what I really did was I went deep, dark into the soul of things, into what everybody's up against. And I got to know what everybody's really up against. And it's really phenomenal stuff. This is a difficult life and a difficult world in a way. And if you don't somehow think it should be different and keep judging it, it actually turns out to be a very viable path and an incredibly important phase. You just have to realize that you're in that, you know, kind of big karmic soup, and you may have to, you know, serve some time in the karmic precincts before you fully emerge.
Karmic precincts, I like that.
Into the light of the heavenly city.
And also another way of phrasing some of this that I read was that going into the darkest, well, I guess the ugliest, most perplexing parts, there are always seeds, right? Seeds of wonder, seeds of enlightenment. Do you want to talk about that too? Because that, I think we all need to hear that, don't you?
Well, yes. See, when people express hope or optimism or faith or something, usually they're not basing it on that much. It's more like a hunch or something or a wish or a prayer. But in the stream that I'm part of, we know that what will work out in the future is already working out now, and that what will save us all and bring us into this incredible space is already working now. It's just working hard labor under difficult conditions, but the one in us who will emerge from these changes as who we really are is completely working now, is completely who we are now. We just don't quite know it yet. And so essentially everything's been already set up. It's already been created to be what it will be, but we in our mind are looking backwards. Minds always look in the rearview mirror. So everybody's mind is looking backwards to what used to happen and how it's still happening and always will be happening.
I mean, that's living out of our reactions, is that right?
Yes.
And old beliefs.
But if you were to look forward, you would see that everything you are meant to become, you are in the midst of becoming. It's just that you are cut off from that knowledge because you think there's something wrong with you.
Well, that's true. That became very clear in here, didn't it? That we all have this deep, I don't think it was said hatred, but a deep, like, irate reaction to what we are deep down inside, as if there's something wrong with us.
Yes. Yeah, there is a lot of that going around for sure.
Mm-hmm. So if someone loses their house, their mortgage, someone gets into what I keep calling the mortgage swindle and the machinations of these crazy duality times, it seems to me that duality is all really acting out in front of us. So using what you were just talking about, how could we get the seed? How could we get the delight of it? Do you see what I mean? It's funny that delight is delight, right?
Well, I would say essentially whenever we're tested, whenever we're tried, whenever we're put through these Job-like ordeals that we go through, what's happening really is that we're kind of ready to take ourselves to the next level. And just when we're about to do it, we sort of double back around and check out the previous level. And maybe it drags us down for a while. But essentially, really what's happening is we're already in the one who's ready to take us forward. We just have to make sure that we're not fooling ourselves. So that's why we're so, you know, intent on going back. We don't want to fool ourselves this time.
Is that a state of depression? Active depression?
Well, I would say that psychological illness is, if you're not psychologically ill and you're living in the present world, you're probably not paying any attention. You're probably so far off in infinity somewhere that you don't notice, but the world is sick. It's a sick, crazy world. And on the surface, in its, you know, outer drama, soul drama, and you have to be crazy to be around here. It's just that some of us are pretty deeply crazy, and when you get really deeply crazy, your own sanity part has trouble getting through because you're busy saying, no, I'm crazy, I'm really crazy now. And so it's very hard to get through to yourself when you're way down that tube. But otherwise, you're always, you know, you can save yourself easily if you can just appreciate the lessons being learned, the darkness being eaten, the whole scene being, you know, part of a story that we'll clarify later, and basically just move with it.
Is that like play free fall or?
Yes, because, see, essentially your body wisdom is to move through the worst with a deep belly smile.
Mm-hmm. A deep belly smile, which is what houses the subconscious, right?
Yes, it's why we know we can do it when we know we can't do it.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, that makes sense. So let's talk about how the collective is functioning. Given this, which I really love what we're talking about, and to me it could go on for quite a while because it's complex. But the whole collective, we talked about the shift, right? And I just wonder what you think about the collective, and is it actually going to make a huge change so that we don't have to live in the crazy swill that you referred to?
I've always had this thing where if I go to a movie and somebody has already seen it and they want to tell me what happened, I always have said all my life, I don't want to hear it. I want to, you know, stay with the suspense. I don't want to know how it turns out.
Right.
And I'm the prophet who doesn't want to know how things turn out. So the way I prophesy is of an open portal world where all things are possible, but I don't view it in terms of, you know, coming to a certain death or end or difficulty, because it doesn't feel that way to me. It feels to me that it's, in other words, there's some way that you develop from a really strong heart space, this trust in Divine Mother, this trust in Earth Mother, this trust in the angels, this trust in your own true self, this trust in your future selves, this trust in Sophia Christos, this trust in everything that you know is real and true. You learn to trust it, and you learn that if you really trust it fully, it will carry you through. But that's a difficult lesson, and that's the one people have to learn.
But it's something we all have to learn.
Yes, because there's some part of us that doubts that doubts the doubter, and doubt is really in counterpolarity to trust.
But trust is a very big word, isn't it?
It is. It's the big one. Because once upon a time, a long time ago, many, many years ago, I was in this situation where you had to trust completely to even breathe. And I did. I trusted completely for over 6 months. I learned that just to trust completely is the greatest high in the world.
Oh, really?
Yes, it is. Because you feel connected to everything and you know it's going to work out.
So you're saying it's a choice. It's a choice in the moment. It's not something that is just...
Yes, right. And it's something you learn. You discover how to be trusting. Because you basically discover that even though there are deceivers and betrayers and devils and everything else you'd like to populate this world with, that fundamentally you can decide by uniting yourself lovingly with the source, which is what I'm calling trust.
And you can just move on through it, can you?
Yes, because there are these amazing friends on the inner that are saying, well, you know, come on in, the water's fine.
Well, you're going to make me think, you see, so I'm going to have to sit and think about that. Well, as an intuitive, I find I get a lot of promptings and hints and so on, but sometimes I get lost, so it's good to hear what you're saying about that. Now, let's talk about aspects of your classes, and I think we'll probably cycle in and out of the book and what we're talking about there as well. I mean, there's a lot to say. I want to throw one line in, too, before we leave the beginning of the book, where she refers to West Coast spirituality in a rather cheeky way. I enjoyed that. What do you make of that?
Would you just say that again? I missed what you just said.
I said there's a reference to West Coast spirituality, and it wasn't pejorative,
yes,
but it was a little bit cheeky, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was the one who became so excited by West Coast spirituality when I first encountered it in 1970, mm-hmm, and I became an apostle of West Coast spirituality. I know it right, left, center. In West Coast spirituality, you always believe everything will work out for the best, and underneath you fear that everything will work out for the worst, and you get caught in between those.
But we do a lot of imaging.
Yes.
It's funny. I just burst out laughing with that. I thought that was pretty good. Okay. So now let's talk about your classes, which Star Genesis Wisdom classes. He's starting, Elias is starting a series of classes May 7th, and it's going to be really exciting. So it starts with the class one is about the heart space and where the new creation is born, and it's called Heart Space Activation. I like that. We've already talked a little bit about that, haven't we?
Yeah, heart space activation is actually the main thing, really. I like to do teleclasses where we get into it all right away in the first class, and that's what we're going to be doing.
Well, just let me say this, because we can't really do the Christing process or that huge activation of our infinite selves if we don't get into the heart space, can we? Or is that being
no,
very West Coast?
No, because that is our radiant center of direct connection. It is.
Right.
Definitely. So essentially what we're going to be doing is giving people love in action. What people need is to experience what love is like and what love is not like, and what is true love and what is false love, because we're all seeking true love and we're all plagued by false love.
Uh-huh.
Not only are we plagued by false love coming toward us from others, but also coming from us to others. Both kinds of love come through us, and we need to learn the difference. And to me, to put it very, very simply, love that is true enhances everybody involved, and love that is false goes off in a corner and generates something that doesn't benefit the whole circle.
Hmm. I
know that's a different way to look at it, but that's how I see it.
Well, one of the questions I have, or one of the things I guess I trust or believe, is that love is an awakening, expanding process. And I notice with Sarah, or Theana, as she's called also, she's awakening more and more and more to love as she goes through, isn't she?
Yeah, she had trouble loving as Sarah because she was conflicted about every single thing she felt, every emotion. After death, she gave that over completely, and she became the wholeness, the oneness of her. The wholeness and oneness of her is so astounding to interact with that when people do connect with her, and some people do, it's such a tremendously clean, burning high. So that's the realm that we're going to take up in the first session.
Wow, that's wonderful. And is it does it come through intention? Did she intend it, or did she surrender into releasing for it?
She essentially woke up in dying and said, "Well, if I'm going to be through with this life, I better be on with another life totally, or else I'm going to really disappoint and frustrate myself and my entire destiny. So I think I'll just get on with it right now."
Okay. She sounds like she's a wonderful character.
Oh, she's incredible.
Yeah.
You would love her. She would love you. Actually, she does.
Yeah, I was just going to say, she's probably right here because I feel a lot of love right now. So you're going to get everybody on the first class. We're going to all learn how to do love, right?
Yes.
And we're going to know how to assess it within ourselves. Because I think the old attachment factor does sneak in at times, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. We want to grab it. Mm-hmm. And that's where love disappears the moment you grab it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Put it in a contract. So then,
it's not yours to have, basically. Love does not belong to us. Love is a free bird.
But isn't it an in us, isn't it an unfurlment in us kind of thing?
Yes. Yes.
So it is really a part of us if we let it be, is it not?
Yes. It's the space that we agreed to inhabit in this lifetime before we came. It's the space that we will look toward as the key to our life after we die. And it's the space that the child in us at every moment knows is what counts the most.
Hmm. So what happens with children when babies are born? Very rarely, I suspect, do most come in and have that kind of love around them. I know babies are automatically loved in a lot of ways, but they come into the concoction of their family, their lineage, don't they?
I have a child who's going to turn 10 tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
And all he wants to do, his name is Ali, mm-hmm. and all he wants to do is hug and be hugged all the time. He's just, today we were joking and the whole family hugged and we said, okay, we're the hug family because everybody's just hugging like crazy around here. And it's because we don't, in our family, love is really what it's all about. Anything else is secondary. We're not really that interested. We're just sort of trying to learn how to love. But yeah, usually what you get is people don't like the child that comes through. They don't want her or him. They wish it was more like them or something. And to really receive objectively and dispassionately and also lovingly and caringly a being that comes requires you to wake up in childbirth and in parenting, and it's quite an advanced path, really.
Hmm. I like what you said a minute ago, which was you were all learning to love, and I thought that's one of my favorite lines because I think it's something we need to consciously let ourselves open to and to share. That's what I'm hearing from your story there.
Yes.
And you have four children, right?
Yeah, there's four ones. The little one turned 4.5 today, so the youngest is 4.5, and the oldest in August will be 12.
See, you've got your hands full there.
Yeah, I do, and my heart full, because all they want to do is love me. I mean, it's kind of overwhelming. They just all come up to me and keep hugging me. They don't do much else. They don't ask me for the keys to the car yet or anything. they just love me.
But when they fall in love with the keys to the car, you've got yourself a whole other issue. Well, I'm really happy to hear you talking like that because I think it's like a conscious, like Sarah did as she left, a conscious opening to letting that be the prime creation, right?
Yes.
Hmm. Love. I don't know how many of us have talked over the last few weeks. I really want to understand what love is, so they better tune into at least your first class, if not the whole series.
Well, we're going to, in a sense, elaborate the different levels of that lesson, because the first is the core one, but then you have to go into the different areas where love essentially has gotten lost and entangled.
Yeah, that's why you're calling this love in action, right?
Yes.
All right, well, so class two, you're talking about the sacred death portal. And is that, talk about that now. What is the sacred death portal?
Okay, the main place where love can be reborn and love has gotten a little stuck is at the death portal. In other words, a lot of people feel unconsciously and subconsciously that when someone they love dies, that they've got to sort of diminish the intensity of their connection with that being because of quasi-spiritual teachings about that, mm-hmm. and that they essentially need to just lay off, go their own way, and basically treat the person who died as though they really just died, and that's that.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's so clear from lots of experience now that love begins at the point of death, that love is launched at the point of death, that a death is an invitation toward love.
But can death also be a tightening against love?
Well, it can be if the one who's dying and the ones connected with them don't see heart to heart.
Right. Okay. Back to the heart. Mm-hmm.
So certainly that can help.
Yes. So that the sacred death portal is the opening to love if you should choose that, right?
Yes. And the kind of love that now exists between those who've died and those who live on is becoming a force in evolution. And essentially we're going to invoke that force in such a way that anybody on the call can feel that any deaths they're involved with are blessings and gifts and graces, and that they can treat them that way and go with them that way and be infused with a lot of help and support in the process.
Isn't that wonderful?
It is.
So this is like the veil thinning and heaven and earth connecting and so on, hey?
Yes. Mm.
So are you going to be doing like meditations for this?
You know, the person I'm going to be on May 14th, 2 weeks from now, I have no idea who he is.
Because you're unfurling too, huh?
Yeah, I'm such a shapeshifter. Whoever shows up in me that day will undoubtedly know the answer to your question.
Well, there's no real answer. I think what you're telling me. Oh, for example, my mother, who was really quite difficult to get along with and was still cranky after she passed, came to see me 17 years later and said, "I have finally broken through a barrier I had against love my whole life, and I want you to know." And I cried. My dad cried. You felt it, you know.
Yes.
But that was my first experience of knowing that someone can break through even after they've gone through the portal.
Oh, yeah. Death doesn't end at death. That's just the first death for people who really die. The ones who die with any kind of regenerative energy will die many deaths, and each death will lead them further. Hmm.
And actually, if we're smart here on Earth, we will die many deaths before we reach the actual physical
yes,
passing.
Yes, deaths are very fertile dark soul territory that we need. We need that kind of element really powerfully, especially when we're surface mentally oriented.
Mm-hmm. Are you raising your children with this kind of belief, or knowing?
Well, the kids each seem to have their own knowing perfectly intact, and they don't agree with each other about everything or anything like that. but they all have a certain common ground. Also, we call them the children of Gaia, because their last name, all these children, is Gaia. And I would say they all know what we know, but we don't have to convince them, and they don't have to convince us.
Well, that's really interesting. And do they unfold and grow and so on more than a lot of normal kids?
Yes, particularly in one respect. It's that they engage the depth of things. Each one of them incredibly engages the depths of things. And so they have so much richer a context.
Do they have fun?
Oh, sure. But they're here for selfless purposes, ultimately. Of course, as children, you have to do the fun thing. Otherwise, you would feel cheated and deprived. So they do the fun thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they're aware of their own spirit all the time, I bet you.
Yes.
Well, this is exciting. So now when we get to class three, I think it's very exciting to know that you're raising children with that kind of freedom to be their light. I really love that. And that must take a lot of consciousness on both your part and your wife's part, eh?
It's a total investment of being, but so is this whole life for me.
Mm-hmm. And your wife as well?
She is into it about 120% to my 100%.
Oh, okay. Good match. It's always good to have a great nurturer around you, isn't it?
Oh, boy, especially because she does it all from such a deep, true place that she's not caught up in it at all.
Oh, that's wonderful. All right, so I'm going to go back to your, not that I'm not interested in her, but I'm interested in this huge process you're taking us through. And when I, when you, I asked you about being an astrologer, for example, and you've got a lot in here about astrology, but not in the astrological sense. You're talking about, for example, the Uranus-Pluto square. You're talking about the Saturn, where is it now? There's a section, the seven keys or something, and the Saturn.
Yes.
Yes. Do you want to talk a tiny bit about the some of the planets? I think there's five planets there for that.
Well, let's do Uranus square Pluto first because it's so pivotal. Any class I would do between 2012 and 2015 would have a keying on Uranus square Pluto, but especially this one because on May 20th, the third of the Uranus Pluto squares, the first two were last summer, and the fourth will be in November. The one that's happening on May 20th is particularly powerful because of the degrees involved and is very, very transformational. And so I feel like a big transformational possibility is at hand right now, and that these classes are planned to be, you know, around that same time.
So if it's a transformational transit, would you call it a transit? Or
yes, what happens is that Pluto is where the depths are worked out, and Uranus is where the heights are seen and known and united with. So when they're square, what's happening is we're having a crisis between our depth soul and our height spirit. Hmm. A big crisis where it feels like we're being split apart into two divergent worlds. But that very thing is what's honing everybody to bring those two together. First, you feel like you can, and then you feel like you must.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And so from there, we get what kind of an expansion possibility, do we, if we choose it? We have to choose it, right?
Yes.
And you've got opening spark activation. Is that what happens? Or is that what you're going to do on the class?
One of the things I really want to do in these classes is to give people tools that they can work with where they get it that they're continuously in the spirit path and continuously in the soul depths as well, and that it's not so terrible to be split between soul and spirit. It's just a path and a journey that we're all on together.
So the soul is the one that holds the murky emotions and the old reactions and the
yes.
karmic, badharmic stuff.
Yes.
Well, now listen, this Uranus-Pluto square is just before my birthday. So I don't know what's going to happen to me. Do I get to ascend?
Well, you'll be given a menu by Cosmic Central, I'm sure, in time. But no, to be more serious about it, I would say that...
I like to laugh, too.
I would say that it's completely a question of destiny, which means future forces will do with you what you really are open to.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. So it's kind of getting out the broom and getting going, sweeping up the resistances.
Yes,
and the...
yes.
But it also might bring up, now, the Uranus-Pluto square might bring up some really ucky stuff from the past for any of us, right? Not just me.
Yeah, what it tends to do is to give you the most intense, most important, most crucially needing to be worked out past fragments, which sometimes we have a lot of judgments about and a lot of condemnations about, and that's part of what we have to work out, is to where we're at one with these things and not busy judging them and condemning them.
And so being at one with them is saying, I have been this or that, and I accept that?
Yeah, it's going far enough into it that you get the feeling for it, and you be with it, and it shows you the way through.
Well, that's going to be very interesting. I know the other ones have been very challenging as well. They've been challenging. I think a lot of us are catapulting through changes right now.
Yeah, very few people can keep track of what's happening, but when they get a moment of clarity, what they feel is that it's all going exactly in the way it needs to, and it really is tough going.
Yeah, and it is, and it has been, and I think that the dualities have really echoed within each of us as well. A lot of the corruption that's being shown and the anxieties on the planet and the war stuff and so on. I think all of us feel that kind of tear inside. I don't know about you, but that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, well, the thing about the heart's path is you have to then endow even the things that people would love to blame and scapegoat, you have to endow those with their larger meaning and power. So you can't really just sort of consign the world to the leading characters or something. You have to be engaged in this life, in this world, as though it really matters.
So you mean we have to listen to the news, Elias?
Oh, I don't think necessarily so, but you need to be the answer to the news and to know that you do have that answer.
Yeah, that's a big focus, isn't it? It's like going into the dark to find the seeds in a way, isn't it?
Yes.
And it's like, if it's a crazy stew that you kind of implied earlier, you know, that it is kind of crazy and sick here. It is hard to just stay in it, but that's the job, and it will not make sense, right?
Yeah, there's always an escapist part of ourselves that's particularly irritated these days because you don't get a lot of chances to get away from the stew and all of its boiling over qualities. So, yeah, it's a tough endurance contest.
And then when you talk about Uranus, Pluto, the Uranus is the one that gives you the higher perspective. Can it guide us to see the higher, you know what I mean, the overall picture, the overview of it?
Yes. Uranus is an intuitive. And if you listen to your intuition, your telepathies, your inner sight, your inner sense, Uranus will speak loud and clear.
That's actually pretty interesting. So this is where you bring in parts of your astrological wisdom as well, eh? The map?
Yes.
And, so the serpentine desire bursts forth in this year of the snake. I want to get back to some other astrology things that are in this book too, or anything you want to talk about. But let's take a look at these other two sections. The serpentine desire. Can you talk about that? Serpentine is great.
This is the year of the water snake, and this is partly to do with that, is getting inside of the core of the year of the water snake, and all of us are getting catalyzed in this year to be in this kind of serpentine coils world where everything is sort of seething and very, very intense, very charged. And the basis of that particular session of the teleclasses is to try to give people a total in on the year of the snake so that they can, in effect, fuse with the snake's medicine and counter the snake's venom by finding the antidote.
And is the water snake usually down under the surface? Is that what we're hearing?
Yes, it's for most people, most of the time, almost everything happening in the water snake is elusive because you cannot think about it. It's the least mental of all prototypes. So you can't think about it. You can't figure it out. You have to wade into it and be inside of it.
Interesting, huh? It's kind of slithery and difficult to hold on to, right?
Yes, the only exception to that is, let's say you're in some sort of shamanic task and you get really focused and really centered and have all the beings and worlds there with you ritualistically, you find that it's like right there, the whole serpentine desire, the desire to break through to the other side is just right there and all the forces are at work and the thing clarifies. It's not that difficult.
Have you done that?
I haven't done that exact thing. I will. We're just moving to a longer-term situation day after tomorrow. So we're just about to enter a very different phase in our life. We've been very transitory in recent months. So I think once we have a sacred space set up there, that would be one of the first things I want to do.
And that's it. You would go into a ritualistic trance and explore.
Yeah, although I'm not much for real trance. I've seen too many spells cast. It's more like a kind of a subtle internal attention.
That sounds wonderful. And you teach your kids that too?
I think they're teaching me it. Just about everything I want to teach them, they're also teaching me.
Well, they're the serpentine, I guess. And then it's number. What I meant by that is that they're under currents and they're smoothly moving through.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I wasn't trying to be judgmental. I hope you didn't take it that way anyway.
Mm-mm.
Okay, so then the next one is a surprise in the moment element awaits us in the fifth class.
Right. What we really want to launch there, I believe because we're still not totally clear about it, but it feels to me at this moment very strong that we need to do two things in the last session. One, really, really ask people to come forth with their experience of the classes and where they are now and stuff, because we're going to have limited sharing with everybody, but it will be much less limited the last time. But also prompting it all by doing special oracles, and there's a new book of ours coming out called Star Sparks, and it's involved with that, degree oracles, imaginative pictures, and essentially in the moment picking an oracle or two or whatever for the class, for the moment, and then going with that energy and showing how this star genesis works at its most direct level.
That could be pretty fascinating. And let's go back to the term star genesis. What does that, what exactly does that mean? Are you, I'll let you explain it.
It means, it goes back to Atlantis. In Atlantis, when we did the original star work at this great star temples, our conviction was very, very different from astrology. Our conviction was that the main purpose of studying the stars was to give ourselves and each other and everybody who needed it favorable incarnations, to follow timelines and see where things were leading and try to essentially help people to choose the starry configurations that are right for them. And so Star Genesis ultimately is about that. It's about becoming completely co-creative in your stars. But you have to start from, you know, the place that the astrologers place you, which is basically being at the mercy of the world as it is. And then you have to sort of bring yourself further through from there.
Find any ball bearings you can.
Yes. But it is a genesis. It is a new birth.
Okay. And it isn't a genesis of stars. Many people say they're creating universes and stars. And I thought,
no, you're participating fully in your own co-creation. And that's why the readings that we do these days, we call them life activation, because what we have found is that people so much need to be activated. They're dormant. They're not quite really coming through. It drives them crazy, but they can't quite galvanize themselves to be fully here.
And so that's very like the awakening we keep hearing about, isn't it?
Yes.
And a lot of people are using that. Well, this is really exciting stuff. Now, looking at the book, first of all, are you still speaking with Theana? Is your next book also her journey on the other side?
Yeah, we've now put out the two books, you know, the Book of Theana, right, and the Christ Letters.
Mm-hmm.
There's three books to put out. And so... there's some noise around here, so I better close this window.
I was just thinking, you have your leaf blowers too, right?
Yeah, especially around here. I think he's not going to be around here too long, though. Anyway, let's see, where was I?
I was asking if you were going to write more, and you were talking about the second book.
Yeah,
and then
we're actually putting out a third book, which at the working title at the moment is The Vibrant Circle. And it's further work of hers, but also she has formed something that we call the Awake Ones Circle, and people who see what actually is very new in this work is that a whole bunch of people that I knew or one of us knew in life died at various junctures, And then years later, suddenly you hear from them and they're part of the Awake One circle, and they bring a unique quality to it. So it's not just Theana Vivian, Hoti Vai, the woman of many names, Sarah. It's not just her. It's a whole cluster of souls who go through similar related deaths to hers, often quite inspired by her, actually, and then come around and help us also. So it's a whole larger constellation at this point. We're all in it together.
And the work doesn't stop just because we get beyond this dimension, and that's something we used to believe, right?
Yeah, well, in an evolutionary emergency, it is so self-indulgent to think that people get to rest in peace and go on to some whole other thing and just play golf forever or something. This is silly. It's just silly. We need all hands on deck. This is the Titanic sinking. We need all hands on deck.
What's the Titanic? This planet?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Everything we've ever known and been familiar with is dissolving, is decomposing, is not holding up. And we need an evolutionary shift of the greatest magnitude rapidly. And those who have died are a tremendous resource for the changes. It's a whole huge subject. But yeah, we're continuing to... So I tune into, in the new book, we will have a lot of material by Theana Vivian, but also letters by 10, 12, 15 others.
Oh, wow.
That give their
exciting
part in this story.
Now tell me, do you think a lot of people pass in order to, just going back to this emergency, the shift that we need to make, do you think a lot of people pass on purpose so they can work from that side? I don't mean suicidal. I mean say, okay, I'm out of here. And
there have been a lot of people dying in recent years who've known at one level or another that their best contribution would come from the death side, yes.
Mm-hmm. And they're organized over there, eh?
Yeah, and it's not that difficult to do. All you have to do is when you die, actually a number of these souls go through some difficult things right at first after they die because they have stuff to work out. But you have to basically just have this thrust of your being that says, well, I'm here for the total evolution and I've done my part in this life, but there's a whole other part to play. When you just get that, when you just feel that, know that, it's so helpful because then you can get on with it pretty fast.
And you can call in, or people here can call in beings on the other side in order to assist them with their own waking up, can they not?
Yes.
That's, I mean, besides angels and guides. And so
that's
on
what we're referring to. In fact, almost everybody has somebody who's died who has gone on further beyond the state they were in when they died and when they lived, and who can help in major ways.
It's very exciting. So what do you think about the shift? Is it happening? And I want to get back to your book because we're going to end this and we haven't finished everything we're supposed to do yet.
The shift is happening.
Okay.
It's happening in an unhealthy organism. So it's happening in a labored way. It's not happening smoothly and wondrously, but it is happening.
But when you say unhealthy organisms, are you talking about people who are dualistic and that sort of thing?
Well, the whole collective mindset is basically that everything depends on the external, and the spiritual reality is everything depends on the internal.
Right.
So there's a reversal, a total radical reversal of perspective in the way the world is viewed collectively.
It's really, isn't that interesting? So I immediately want to say, Elias, do you think that Steve Jobs is being shaken up enough to come back and really work with people on a huge financial level to shift the collective? It was just an idea.
I don't know, but I do know that he can probably do a heaven of a lot more in the next few years by inspiring a few people on this side in a very major way than by any other means.
That's what I believe that, you know. I really feel like that's possible. And it was only recently I realized that it's okay to call on specific beings on the other side. I used to think that would interrupt their flow, but I don't feel
well,
that
anymore. There are laws, but the way it works is that if you're really interrupting their flow, it won't work out.
Oh, okay. So that's safe. Well, this is very, it's so wonderful to talk to you. And I wanted to ask you more about the planets that you had here and the dimensions, and we didn't get all that done. So perhaps you'll come back on, will you?
Yeah.
And tell people exactly when your teleclasses are and how they can tune into them. They're going to be fascinating.
Well, the teleclasses start May 7th, mm-hmm. and which is a week from right now.
Okay.
And they will be, therefore, on Tuesdays, every Tuesday. And all you have to do is check into my website, which is called stargenesiswisdom.com.
Okay, and they're just five weeks?
Yes. There will be another series of classes a little bit after that, but this is this series, yes.
Okay, so you're essentially taking people through a huge evolutionary trajectory. It's not a trajectory, it's a path, right?
Yes. I'm hoping that we can ground it in and make it into something where people can come and do live groups and all kinds of things, because essentially we need to take up the transformation as completely as possible.
Well, I feel as you're talking about these different segments of the classes, I feel that kind of awakening pulse that comes up in me when I know I'm getting something I really need. So I'm sure people will feel that as they take these classes.
People can also get in touch with me about readings and also about anything else, and I'll give you these two phone numbers that are relevant, okay?
Perfect. Yes, go ahead.
So my California voicemail, which is always good, is 831-425-3134. 425-3134 in Santa Cruz. And then the second number, which will open up on May 2nd, beginning May 2nd, the new number will be 808, the local number, 808-965-8285, 965-8285, Big Island.
And they could send an email through your website, I bet you, too.
Yes.
Well, this is really wonderful to speak with you, Elias, and I want to say happy birthday to your four-year-old, five-year-old?
Four and a half and 10, yes.
Yes, happy birthday and happy move to all of you. And this is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for tuning into Paradigm Shifters and for meeting our latest Paradigm Shifter. And there is a Paradigm Shift going on. We're all very happy about that. Write to me at veronica@veronicaentwistle.com with any feedback, comments, and many blessings, everyone. Thank you for listening.